you know, we all look at things through our own lens, and we think, you know, I've always wondered, it's kind of weird or whatever, but what I see as green, I wonder, and we'll never know, if my green is the same as what you see green.
Right. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR.FM, and anywhere in the internet, and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial 102.9, here today in our studio with fellow collaborator Jay Harrigan. Jay, how are you doing today?
Steve, couldn't be happier to be making my Franklin Matters debut. I haven't slept in days. The excitement around this is really, really enjoyable. I've been looking forward to it since you and I really talked about it for years, and we're finally getting it done.
Finally getting to it, yeah, because we've been on the air together once upon a time back in the high school parade during the COVID days, and that was fun.
It was a lot of fun. Jim Derrick gave away a lot of cars.
Yes,
we're
he did.
Still paying the price
yes,
for that.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. So.
At least nobody was harmed.
Right. No one was harmed in the making of our show. So.
Yes. So you're quite busy too, which is one of the reasons why it's finally coming around to us getting together. But for those who may not have heard you in some of your other forums or met you otherwise, just give them a little bit of who's Jay? Who's Steve talking with?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. If you talk to my wife and kids, you're going to get a totally different story. I'm the annoying one in the house, but I have been in Franklin for 28 years now. I have two children, grown children. They're still kids to me, like they are to everybody.
Right.
One is a teacher in Plainville. The other one is a chef in Connecticut. My wife is recently retired. I, years ago, was lucky enough when my son was a freshman at high school, in the high school, he played football for a year, and I went to a Boosters Club meeting, and they asked if anybody would be interested in doing the football play-by-play.
Ah, yes.
And I'm like, I always wanted to do that. That seems fun. So I volunteered to do it, and that began my involvement with Franklin TV and radio. It was well before Franklin TV and radio is what it is today. It was... For the sports activities, it was myself and a friend of mine, Bill Page.
Okay.
Carried the equipment to every game, stood either in the press box or the bleachers, recorded the game, and then Bill sold DVDs to parents of the games.
Ah.
That is how he made a little bit of extra money.
Uh-huh.
It was a lot of fun. But it then transformed into what we see today for Franklin TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I have kept involved on the sports side of it. I'm involved. There is one sport I have not called, and that's tennis. But pretty much everything else I've done, boys and girls hockey, boys and girls soccer, football, softball, but you name it, I've done it. Maybe not well. I am known as someone who mispronounces just about everybody's name, and I start a broadcast apologizing for that.
Yes.
But I've been fortunate enough where our executive director, our boss, Pete Fasciano and Chris Flynn have let me continue to do that. I have since, after we did the parade, myself and another person that we work with here, Pandora Carlucci, started at the time what was called a priest, a minister, and a rabbi walked into a radio station. Now it's called
Franklin Faith.
Franklin Faith Forum.
Right.
Because the priest moved on and we brought in another pastor. So completely different than anything I have ever done.
Mm-hmm.
But totally enjoyable.
Yeah, and I think that show in particular kind of helps even from my radio perspective, I mean, we've got others like Jim Derrick with Talking the Blues. Frank has a couple of music shows. Mark Lenzi and...
I'm not the one to ask to remember names.
I just listened to him. It's embarrassing. Mark Lenzi has the wonderful world of wine.
Yeah.
And then you get this Franklin Faith Forum. You're tackling issues with a faith perspective. That's, you don't hear, I haven't, it certainly fills our plate nicely in terms of what's happening on the air. So I think that's pretty good.
It is. It's very interesting. I was born, I'm an Irishman, born and raised a Catholic in Boston, mm-hmm. like most of Bostonians.
Sure.
Went to a Catholic college, you know, been through everything, but we didn't have one of the religions we didn't have represented, and represented is probably the wrong word, but involved in the conversation. We did on occasion would fill in one of the priests from St. Mary's would be here,
mm-hmm.
but it opened up my eyes just to all these different worlds,
yes.
and different perspectives and different thought, and also the history of some of these
yeah.
religions that the we have a rabbi on the show, Tom Albert, who is tremendous, and I have learned a ton from him just sitting here, and you and I right now are in the same studio we do the show in, just listening to him, and it amazes me, and I get calls quite often after a sporting event,
mm-hmm.
complaining about something, complaining about this, complaining about that, complaining about the referees' calls. I've had referees call me
mm-hmm.
because I'm a referee, complaining about the fact that I complained about them.
Oh, right.
After we did the first or second show of, at that point, it was the priest, a minister, and a rabbi, I got a call from a gentleman in town who... is a sports guy. That's how I know him. That's mm-hmm. how I know most
sure.
of the people I do.
Yeah.
And he said, I listened to your show. That was one of the best things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, you're going to be talking. You know, I figured he confused me with you or Jim or something. And he goes, no, the priest minister, he goes, that was tremendous. He goes, first of all, you knew like a couple of big words that I never thought you would. But it, that was exciting to hear, and I think it pushed Pandora and I along
yeah.
because it did fill something for, and maybe it's only five people out there. We don't necessarily know.
Yeah.
But if it touches one person, it's worth doing, putting the time and effort
right.
into it.
Right.
And that's one of our goals here at Franklin TV and radio.
Right. Yeah, and it kind of fits in with one of the principles that I've come across with, having read it in a book, Once Upon a Time, the adjacent possible.
Yeah.
Right? If something is near and new, then that creates kind of that new circle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now, because this is here, this can become possible. Right? So by putting that show out, people now can listen and then have conversations, and potentially, especially in this divisive age with social, etc., now you may have a civil conversation around whether it's a faith topic
mm-hmm.
across disciplines, across faiths. That is a wonderful thing to happen, especially if it does continue to move the conversation forward.
It does a lot of, in full disclosure, Pandora and I do nothing. We get the email. We're told when to show up. One of us normally introduces the show. One of us closes it. The faith leaders are the ones that come up with the topics each
right.
month. They come up with kind of a example or guide of questions
mm-hmm.
to direct, but they never... Things may come to Pandora and I during it that we're able to ask, and it... we've never shied away from anything,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of it is how faith can relate to things that are going on.
Oh, yes.
You know, we clearly, because these days we don't really want to, in that show, go headfirst into faith and politics and things like that. Yeah. But we do go into some, you know, we've had shows about the different way faiths handle deaths of family members, things like that. Yeah. We've had a lot of, you know, how they handle substance abuse and how the individual faith leaders, well, a couple of them have very similar backgrounds, how they may do things a little different. It's just neat to get a different perspective on things that I think all of us sit there and think about and talk about, but we're normally around, heck, I'm around my friends, my referee friends. Mm-hmm. We all look at the same thing the same way.
Right.
It's great to get differing opinions to open up your mind to potentially look at things differently.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even in a referee position, you know, you're watching an athletic event, whatever the sport is, you're seeing what's happening, but the rules interpretation can vary.
And it's, as I always tell many, many of the coaches that have been upset with me over calls through the years, and I think it's the same thing when we get back to our faith forum. I think it's a lot what you do. I think it's a lot what everybody does. It's all what I call angles.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are sitting on opposite sides of the table. We could look at the wall that's to my left, your right, and see something different.
Right.
Because we're 3-4 feet apart.
Absolutely.
And I don't think a lot of people understand that. I think it, when it comes to faith, you certainly, it's your angles, it's the way you've been brought up, how you look at things.
Yes.
In everything we do, it's what I refer to as angles. Not an intelligent term, not a bright term, but it's something I relate to.
It makes sense, and I've used an analogy, so there's one of the big words that I'll toss
out. Check that one off, good.
The analogy I use is that, you know, words clearly matter.
Mm-hmm.
And at a simple level, you know, we can talk about green grass. And your green may be the same as my green. And whether it rains or not, the green grass is there. But when somebody starts particularly looking for painting or carpeting or colors and jerseys to match, that green makes a big difference.
It does.
There's a realm of green, and there's shades of difference all along the way. And if, heaven forbid, you order something and it's not exactly the match you want, there's a difference in that green.
Why do you think my wife does all that at home? And she will be the first to tell you that if you go into my closet, for the most part, I own one suit because she made me buy one. My pants are khaki, because I can't tell colors, but everything goes with khaki.
Sure.
So I'm safe when I...
Absolutely.
I'm safe, but more importantly, she doesn't need to sit at whatever she's doing going, what does my husband look like today? he looks like a rocky cross. So, yes, it's... You know, we all look at things through our own lens, and we think... You know, I've always wondered, it's kind of weird or whatever, but... What I see as green, I wonder, and we'll never know, if my green is the same as what you see green.
Right. Well, especially if you've got that color sensitivity difference.
Yeah.
We may have it in some other way as well, and we're not necessarily looking at it. The only way we may know is if we're in the big TV store looking at all the different monitors, and we're looking and we'll say, I like that one. Why do you like that one? I like this one's better.
Right.
That's about the only way you can do that.
I've had conversations with people going, you know, like uniforms. Oh, I'd love their orange tops. That's not orange. That's brown. Then someone else will go, no, that's purple. You know, we all see things differently. And I do think once we understand that, or at least keep that in the back of the mind.
As a possibility.
Yeah, when we're having conversations with people, I'm not going to say those conversations aren't going to get heated, because a lot of times they still are.
Right.
But maybe after you go back and think about it, you realize, well, look it. Steve and I were looking at something. I thought it was this green. He thought it was that green. That's why we might not have agreed.
Sure.
Or we might not have understood each other.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the road I did not expect us to go down.
Oh, yeah. See? But that's where we, at least in terms of why we're intending to do this, is to, there's a heck of a lot going on in Franklin.
Absolutely.
And words matter.
Yeah.
And somebody may be saying, oh, I heard that. Does that mean that? And somebody else may be hearing the same thing and saying, I think it means this.
Mm.
So that's why we want to kind of walk through that.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier in the week, as I said, when we started talking about doing this, you were telling me some stuff that was going on because you're much more involved in the town side, the administration mm-hmm. side, the school side, all right. that, than I am. And consequently, you understand and you know a lot more about it. Plus your background, mm-hmm. You understand a lot of this. And our conversation turned to the fact that myself, and if it's me, there's probably at least one other person out there that doesn't understand what's right. going on.
Sure.
And we talked about doing a kind of a sit down where we talk about some of these things, but kind of dumbing it down, for lack of a better word,
mm-hmm.
you know, having an uninformed Franklinite try to get a little more informed. And we talked about the fact that some of my questions that I may have may be the least intelligent questions that have been heard. But if I've always found if one person has that question, there's a lot of people that have it.
Mm-hmm.
I do think what is huge for what is going on, the vote in June and subsequent issues come the fall, that we need to get people out there. But we need to get people out there that are informed.
Yeah.
And what better way to do it than try, at least, to inform someone who is uninformed.
Yep. I appreciate you taking the effort because, Clay, for those who may not know, I started this many, many years ago, certainly have learned over the years. And my initial purpose is simply to create the informed voter when they
Correct.
Go to the polls.
Yeah.
Right. Make sure that they know, because when I started, I'd go to a meeting. It was X number of hours and I'd read the paper the next day. And wait a minute, that was a 5-minute conversation.
Right.
What was the rest of it?
Right.
Right. So I try to give as much of the context and then coordinating with TV, with the YouTube link so they can go back and
yes,
watch.
Right.
Give my notes, give the documentation. So it's as much possible augmenting what the town does. Augmenting what the TV studio does to put it in one place so that, okay, this is what you can follow. This is what literally matters to Franklin.
And you have, and we've known each other or known of each other, I don't know how long. I can mm-hmm. barely remember what I did this morning. But when I needed to read about something or somewhat get informed,
mm-hmm.
I'd go to Franklin Matters. Mm-hmm. I would find out what you, because the other thing I think that's great about what you do and what Franklin Matters does is you present the information.
Right.
You don't at the end of it go, as a result, you need to do X, Y, and Z mm-hmm. because that's what I think is right. You don't do that. You present the information, you talk to the individuals involved so people can make their own decision, but at least have, and my college professors would be amazed I'm saying that, this slightly more knowledge than they had beforehand.
They started. Yeah.
And that I think is a huge benefit to not only myself, but the residents of Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this whole perfect fit of Franklin Matters, Franklin TV and radio has worked so well, because that's just what we all try to do. We mm-hmm. just try to present stuff. People can pick and choose what they want,
right.
but at least it's out there.
Yep, for sure. So where do you want to begin with this
okay.
mix of things that are out there?
So we have coming up, and stop me immediately when I'm wrong, an override vote coming up in June. I believe it's June 11th.
Tuesday, June 11th, the high school polling hours from 6 a.m. through 8
p.m. Okay.
single question on the ballot, simply authorizing the town to increase taxes more than the 2.5%, which is why it's an override.
Okay.
Generally, the town increases taxes automatically every single year by the automatic 2.5%. And I know even councilors object when I have asked them, why are you going to approve an automatic tax increase? And they say, we don't approve a tax increase. Excuse me, technically you do. Every time right. you approve the budget, you're building into that the use of the 2.5%. And that's an automatic one. Jamie has said even recently that the town always uses that. And realistically, in a day where inflation is a little bit higher than it has been, we need that 2.5% just to kind of keep up with things. Clearly, new growth is another term. We'll spend some time perhaps on that. But that helps fund the operations on a day-to-day basis. You run a household. I run a household. Prices increase.
My wife runs a household.
You live in the household she runs.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
For every time we turn around, there are increases here. Sometimes, you know, they're temporary. Gas goes up. It's usually around Memorial Day that it'll drop a little bit. Then it'll come back up and drop a little bit. And eventually, you know, it gets to a high of what recently was like 455 or whatever. Yeah. And then it's back down now to what, 350, 340-ish?
Yeah, depending on where you go.
Yeah. So there are some of those that vary and some of those that once they go up, they really don't come back down again. So
right.
Town in providing our services, and Jamie likes to refer to the town effectively as a service organization. They're providing services to us, whether through the library, through the senior center, the water, sewer, roads, schools in terms of education. They're a service organization on our behalf, which I buy that concept. Clearly, that's what they do.
Yeah.
They're looking to maximize their income and efficiency, mm-hmm. and clearly there's a whole argument and a whole thread around how efficient are we, and there are some folks that say, well, we're top heavy, we got too many administrators. No, I don't buy that. We'll spend time talking about that with them. But at some point in time, and clearly, at least from the recent years, between Jeff Nutting and then Jamie now and our town administrator, they were forecasting this fiscal cliff was coming.
Mm-hmm.
We managed to get by it a little bit at a time for at least the recent 4 or 5 years, primarily with, coming out of COVID, the federal funding, whether it's the ARPA funds or the ESSER funds on the school side.
Mm-hmm.
There was a whole infusion of multiple levels of mega bucks in some cases that clearly were defined for specific purposes, but by putting federal funds to this, now we've got our funds that we can use to fill in the operational budget. So we were able to get by, but now the time has come where all those federal funds are drying up. All the ESSER funds on the school side expired at the end of June.
Mm.
So all of a sudden, you know, they've got to make the decision in terms of, well, we're going to continue to provide mental health counselors to students. And that was an increase that was added post-COVID, because they were seeing that the kids were coming from the school, and we can see the world is U.S. is no, and Franklin's no exception.
Correct.
There's some challenges
in
the mental health status of us all. Things are much quicker. People are much quicker to anger, much less accommodating, much less getting to that kind of common good.
Correct.
That we're the Commonwealth for.
Right.
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 It's, if it's not this, it's not that, it's much more divisive. That affects us all, and certainly that's one of the reasons why the schools, in that specific case, used funds for counselors. That fund's going away, so they're incorporating it in there. There's a whole host of reasons. Their budget, the school's budget, is 70% of the total town budget. So
quick question, because someone brought this up to me. We live in Massachusetts.
Yes.
Massachusetts is a commonwealth.
Correct.
It is technically not a state, is that?
It's a different form of state, but it functions in state-like ways in many ways.
But so, does the fact that we are a commonwealth change the way funds are distributed?
Not necessarily.
So that information I got was incorrect.
Not necessarily. I'm not aware of a difference that way. Certainly the state constitutions determine how we operate
okay.
in determining our funding, et cetera. Massachusetts is unique from what I've heard and understood, where we incorporate education in our constitution,
mm-hmm.
which is what Horace Mann, we all know, was born here. He started the public school system as we know, and then back in, I think it was the late 80s, early 90s, there was a lawsuit that says the state was not funding the schools according to the Constitution, and they won,
mm-hmm.
which created Chapter 70, which funds the schools. There's still political debate about how well they fund the schools, but we do get state money
right.
to fund the schools because it's incorporated in our Constitution.
Okay.
Right.
The override, the town and the administrators and those that are in charge feel a need, and I think it's fairly evident that they need more revenue to be able to, whether it's increase or maintain mm-hmm. current services in
yeah.
town. The override, what, say it passes, what happens next? Where do those funds go?
Mm-hmm.
Where are they allocated to, not allocated to? Are we going to see road repairs as a result of that? Or are we going to see less teachers being laid off? You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't think, at least in my mind, there's not a clear understanding of what that means if it passes. And conversely, what it means if it doesn't pass.
Yeah, and that's where I know the One Franklin group certainly had formed and is continuing to start doing their communication campaign. Now that it was a recent decision as of May 1, town council set the date, set the amount, and set how it's going to be allocated. So they're going to be doing their communication campaign. I would certainly refer, and I do have the One Franklin link on Franklin Matters. There's also a No for Franklin link there, so they have that side of it as well. But in my understanding, yes, the override asks the town to approve $6.8 million increase in the taxes. So that would be a percent increase. I won't get into the numbers here because clearly people's valuations vary, et cetera.
Right.
There are going to be sites, if there aren't already, in terms of you put in your house value, and it will calculate what the 2.5 would be approximately.
Approximately, yeah.
Give you in the ballpark. Aside from that, they got to the 6.8 in two ways. School committee, through the superintendent in their budget process, came up with a budget that initially they called, effectively, smartly called it kind of four plans. So there would be a level service plus, a thrive, and I forget the fourth one offhand, but they had
right.
a variety of concepts. Because coming out of last year, people may recall that the middle school after-school activities in late bus was cut.
Right.
So that wasn't available. A lot of people had concerns over that. Certainly the middle school kids theoretically have suffered during the year because they haven't had a great accessibility. Lifelong learning did step up and create some, but that's also fee-based. Higher fee than what the normal fee would have been, but there was still some there. So their intent in the budget this year was to bring back level service, add those back, and then focus on addressing some classroom teacher ratio issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way we're distributed, which in the redistricts is a separate piece, because of the way we're distributed currently, there are some inconsistencies in class sizes. So a class of, call it second graders, might be 18, 18, and 20. Another school may have 25 and 26.
Right.
So you need teachers to level that out.
Yeah.
So they want to bring in X number of teachers. And again, in the show notes, we'll include the link to go to the school department page that has all the specifics of, and even in the FinCom presentation last night, there was a school page that showed like 1.0 teacher, 0.4 teacher, all what the ad would be, assuming it passes.
Okay.
Right, so all that's there. So school committee goes through their entire process, brings up the budget, effectively asking for $9.3 million more than what they got last year from the town.
Yeah.
That's the first key number, $9.3 million. Jamie, on a parallel path, was pulling together the town side of the budget. And people should remember that the town effectively gives the school committee a line item, one line, this is your X number of dollars.
Right.
And then the school committee and school district manages how they do that.
So they decide if they're going to get their line item that Jamie has, says it's $100, that goes to the school department. They decide we're putting $2 here, $8 here, whatever. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So Jamie and the town council can't direct or determine those funds. Clearly, as citizens, they can express their interest. But from a management perspective, Jamie and the town manage the overall piece of the budget. And then the town clearly manages all the police, fire, etc. School committee, school superintendent control the school operations. And there are continued collaboration between them. So, for example, people may recall back, I think it was 2008 or 9, the custodians moved from the school budget to the town. So they functionally operate under facilities, which kind of makes sense. They run the buildings, etc. DPW still cuts the grass, does the snow plowing, etc. So there's a memorandum of understanding of what the town's doing for the schools. They coordinate on a regular basis, and you've been in the municipal building. Jamie's office is back-to-back with Lucas's office.
Right.
Right? So they coordinate almost on a regular basis, if not even just passing in the hallway.
And I don't think people realize how much they do coordinate, how much they talk on a daily basis. And there may be things, specific items they don't agree on, but it's not an adversarial relationship.
No.
They work together.
Correct.
Like you said, they don't share an office, but if you knock down a wall, they share an office.
Yeah. And as opposed to when you travel to other communities, even our neighboring ones, usually the school building is in one place, and on the other side of the town is the municipal building.
Yeah.
Right? So the coincidence of, or happenstance of them getting together is just not fostered by the location.
Right.
They may still get together, but we're operating together in a much better way.
Our, if you will, people in charge can get together much less formally. They can, if Mr. G has a question, and I will always call him Mr. G. He taught both my kids when he first started as a teacher in town. Full disclosure, I think the world of Mr. G.
Yeah.
But he can easily just pop out, stick his head into Jamie's office. Hey, quick question. What does that mean? What are your thoughts on this?
Mm-hmm.
Where in a lot of other towns, that's not doable. You've got to, hey, Steve, I need to sit down with you for 20 minutes while I have a time.
Schedule
2 weeks from Thursday. That's got to be a huge benefit.
Yeah.
I would think.
In my experience doing the reporting that I've done for the 18 plus years, yeah, I think it's a great benefit compared to what I've heard and seen in other communities.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that much said, coming back to the budget, they go through theirs. Schools ask for 9.3 more. Town puts together, gives the schools in the town issued budget 3 million more than they got last year.
Okay.
Right. So schools asked for 9.3 more. Town initially gave them 3. So there's a $6.3 million difference.
Yeah.
That's part of the override number.
Okay.
Right. The town then added another 500,000 to make it 6.8.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's for the facilities department. Facilities department clearly manages all our buildings, and Mike D'Angelo and his new deputy, they manage, I think it's 1.3 million square feet of space.
Man.
1 million of that is schools.
Right.
Significant part.
Yes.
And when budget crunches have come, you know, every year they're, you know, mixing and matching, trying to do, even from a sports piece, DPW has had a reduction in the water that they use to water the fields.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatively an easy reduction. There's minimal intake. We know we're going to get rain. We may not get enough rain, so the grass may be a little bit browner, but it's people can still play and still use the field.
Right,
right. So that's one of the easy reductions. Facilities was one of the others. So maybe they didn't buy extra cleaner, so you clean it once a week instead of other week instead of once a week. You know, so because the facility budget had been so hit, that's where the extra $500,000 is coming from.
Okay.
So $500,000 for facilities, 6.3 from schools, that's the 6.8, which is what the voters are being asked for to approve June 11th.
Okay. So that 6.8, the number that is being voted upon, is that a one-time 6.8 million, or is it, it's not a recurring, it is a one, so, meaning my taxes are going to go up whatever they're going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
A year from now, they're going to go up 2.5%.
Correct.
Will they go up from the new number of the override? Okay.
Yeah, so the override approves the increase, and I don't know if I've heard exactly how much of a percent that would be, but effectively at the end of the year in November, December, there's always a tax rate hearing.
Right, right.
Right, and people can go back and look in the archives because it's all there. But there's a set process which is state controlled in terms of based upon the real estate valuations, which the Board of Assessors do, commercial, residential, personal property, so the building fixtures and functions, refrigerators and things of that sort, all of that has an assessed value.
Mm-hmm.
The assessed value is determined. There's a levy, the tax levy from prior year, mm-hmm. plus the 2.5,
mm-hmm.
and in this case, plus the override, will then set the new levy limit.
Okay.
Right? And then because we've created a bigger pool, a bigger pie, a bigger bucket, different terms have been used in that case, we need more money, we need to increase the pie, increase the bucket. Now the bucket is bigger, it's theoretically the same number of taxpayers. So when you get a larger number on the top and the same denominator, the tax rate's gonna go up a little.
Correct, right? Yeah.
And then it's gonna get distributed. So that's where it's hard to estimate that. If you've got a house that's valued at 500, somebody has got a house valued at 200,000, clearly the tax rate's going to be the same, but the impact's going to be slightly
different. Yeah.
Depending upon what it is.
Because I know you, but I think it's good information for the people that may be listening to this. All those hearings that you mentioned, you've covered them. We're not going to say 100% because you can't do 100%.
Close.
As many as you can,
yes.
You have them all archived. So if people do want to go back and listen to the rate hearing or whatever it
mm-hmm.
may be,
sure.
Or read about it, somewhere yep. in your archives, you have it.
Yeah, that's where, and Franklin TV has the video.
Yes.
And since, I think it was February of 2022, each meeting and sporting event also simultaneously went to YouTube. So
yes.
While we have a public access channel, education channel, and the government channel, each of the shows, if you will, also have an equivalent YouTube channel.
Yes.
So the government meetings last night, FinCom, went directly to YouTube. There was a master plan meeting at the same time, so that went to the education channel,
mm-hmm.
right? And then over time, they take those and put them in the playlist on the town government channel. So you just get the sports events and the educational.
So it gets moved around.
It gets moved, but they get broadcast. It gets up to YouTube, and they're there. What Franklin Matters does is then I'll be there. I'll make an audio recording.
Right.
In my notes, and then I'll share both the video on the first or second day, and then my audio a day later. So I've got a meeting archive that goes back through 2008 for, quote, following the money. So school committee, finance committee, town council, and then as many of the subcommittees of school committee and town council that I can.
So theoretically, someone could, and not theoretically, I think it's in reality.
In reality.
Because could, on their drives, in and out of work, on vacation, whatever, play your old audio recordings of whatever they want to, if they feel they want to get that information. So my point was, the information is still out there.
Absolutely.
It may have been 4 years ago. 4 years ago this time.
It wouldn't be the YouTube stuff.
But yeah, right. But at least the audio of it, which the reality is, except for the charts and the agendas, the audio is the most important part.
Yeah, and being mindful that, okay, we've got a four-hour meeting in some cases. I'm fortunate that Tom Mercer, our town council chair, we generally have a town council quarterbacking session. So you're familiar with kind of the Monday morning quarterbacking?
Yes, yeah.
We'll condense the 2-3-4 hour meeting in about 30 minutes or thereabouts.
Yeah. Right?
So you get the gist of what just happened at the council meeting. With the school committee chair, we do similar. We call it chalkboard chat.
Okay.
Right? So generally after each meeting, and depending upon the schedule, it's not always the, but it's sometime in the week after the meetings, we have those.
So people can listen to that and get an abbreviated version of what happened in the four-hour meeting the night before or earlier that day. Okay. Yeah.
Effectively, the two questions I try to answer is, okay, what just happened?
Right.
And what does it mean to us as residents and taxpayers?
Right.
Right? I mean, zoning in some cases... what is that really going to do? Right? That could be a complex topic.
Yeah.
So we try to make it understandable.
So going back to this override, is, and I think I know the answer to this, but the money for the schools, what is that going to be allocated for? And does that have any financial bearing on the redistricting plan, or is it basically two separate plans?
Yeah, functionally, it's better to approach it as two separate pieces because they were two separate tracks.
Yeah.
For the longer redistricting story, we'll cover that because we haven't touched on that yet. People may remember a few years ago, I think it was really four committees ago, if you go in those two-year cycles, a committee was looking at redistricting, potentially closing Davis there. They did an analysis. The analysis ultimately resulted in closing Davis there. The report that was produced also indicated you could, but we could potentially close some other schools, but it also required a master plan in order to do that. Spin forward, next committee looks at redistricting. And again, they pulled some info together, but they left some unanswered questions, particularly around the demographics. The demographics had been done based on the 2010 data. 2020 census had just come out, but the data was not yet available for them immediately to use. So there were some gaps in the information that they had, and they ultimately decided redistricting wasn't a good choice at this time. We really needed the master plan.
Yeah.
This committee started to do their master plan, picking up and using the two prior reports, filling in the gaps to create the master plan. Now, we were just talking before that even Wednesday night, there was a master plan committee meeting, right? So wait a minute, school committee's got a master plan and town has a master plan? They're two separate things. Yes, they are master planning. So I stood up and I'll take the ownership for it. I had the school committee change the name to comprehensive school facility planning.
Okay.
To avoid the conflict with the master plan.
Oh,
because the master plan is something the town does every 10 years.
Yeah.
That sets up the goals and objectives for our next 10 years. And this facility piece from a school perspective becomes a piece of it. Right? Because we just talked 1.3 million square feet are town facilities. 1 million of that is school facilities. So clearly it plays in that. But I didn't want people to get confused between the two because one is very focused. One is much broader.
Right.
Right.
And I think that's, because it would be very easy to, you just hear master plan, you could be thinking of the town one and I'm thinking of the school one, or vice versa.
So back to the green, the master plan is not green. One's black and one's white.
Yeah, right.
They're two different things.
Okay.
Right.
So
go back to the school's district and committee this year, then took the prior report, filled in the gaps, took the prior demographics, got it updated with the 2020 mm-hmm. census numbers, and completed what they call the master plan. So the advisors and consultants that they had incorporated, again, had used the prior places, so it was minimal effort and minimal cost as well, being mindful of that.
Yeah.
In terms of, okay, you already did this, but you left this out, so just add this time.
And you're talking, you said master plan, but this is the school comprehensive.
This is the school comprehensive.
Okay.
It's still a master plan.
Correct.
Right? So what are they going to do? I mean, we've seen enrollment decline from a school's perspective. We hit a peak of, I think it was 6,200 students in 2009.
Yeah.
And now we're at like 4,700 students. If you remember, at some point in time, we had modular units, in some cases, 3 and 4 modular units at each of the elementary schools.
Right, right.
Davis Thayer had modulars right on the corner
right.
for a number of years.
And I know Kennedy did because every I elementary drive by that every
them.
Day. Yeah.
Yep. Kennedy's finally getting removed.
Yeah.
The modulars are finally getting removed. Purchasing issued the bids, et cetera, they're finally getting removed because they held the bubble, and as the bubble went away, as we had money, we effectively just, you know, took away the modulars. We didn't need them anymore.
Okay.
We have more space still within the buildings. So in the middle school, for example, the middle schools generally are built for handling 500 to 600.
The current middle schools.
Current middle schools, Remington, yeah. Horace Mann, and Annie Sullivan. But there's 320, 350, 360 students in there. So we've got excess capacity.
Total among all three middle schools.
Among all three middle schools, okay. We've got excess capacity. It varies a little bit more on the elementary level.
Yeah.
But we still have excess capacity. So in Lucas's analogy, which I think is a good one, he brought in his key stakeholders, representative of all groups. We're sitting at a table. This is the layout of the district. Step back. Get out of your chairs. Go back along the walls. Look at the district. Look at what we have in terms of what facilities we have. Some are certainly newer than others, right?
Yeah.
What capacity do we have? And we know what students we're going to have.
Right.
We know what teachers we have. And oh, by the way, now we know the numbers that we're going to continue to drop students for a couple of years before leveling out and then effectively not really growing back again. I don't think we're going to be back over 5,000 based on the newest projections. So take a holistic view. Look at what we've got. We got a brand new high school. Okay, put it aside. We've got early childhood development center,
yeah.
Which is that preschool piece. Leave that kind of out of the table. Look at what we have left. You've got two complexes, Keller Sullivan, Remington Jefferson. You've got Horace Mann and Oak.
Yeah.
And you've got Kennedy and Parmenter. Kennedy and Parmenter are aged buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They go back to the 1950s, 1960s in terms of when they were built. And academically, educationally, they would require more money in order to bring them up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But now you've got Remington, Jefferson, Keller, Sullivan, who are newer buildings, right? They may still require, in Remington, Jefferson in particular, because it's already like 25 years.
Right, right.
You still need some infrastructure replacements, et cetera. You know,
absolutely,
put a new roof,
yeah.
et cetera. But the bones of the building are fine.
Yeah.
Right? So they did that look back, look around. How best are we going to deliver education to the students going through? Right. So they had done work on the portrait of a graduate. So again, with stakeholders, what is a graduate from Franklin High School? What are they going to need? What are the skills and qualities and capabilities? You've certainly been exposed to a lot of that, at least on the athletic side. But we've also heard from musically, academically, artistically, what does that take for them to come out of the high school with? Mm. And then how do you build that so that from the entry point, whether it's K or pre-K, coming all the way through, so that they can walk out and be a fully functional adult, effectively, right?
Right, right.
So with that mindset, they stood around the room, and then the consultant worked with them, and the consultant said, you know, you can probably do it better than what you've got, and release two buildings, Kennedy and Parmenter, reuse Remington Jefferson and Keller Sullivan as two elementary K to five, but each of them, Keller, Sullivan, for example, Keller side is the elementary, so that'll be a K to two school.
Okay.
Kindergarten through second grade. And then the Sullivan side, generally the middle school, will be a third through fifth grade. So you'll have kind of two schools within the building concept.
That's what they do in Plainville, where my daughter teaches. Yeah. Her school's K through two.
It's not unique.
Yeah.
It has been done.
Yeah.
Right? So you still get the benefits of kind of the small community. It does broaden the distribution in terms of a neighborhood school, right? Because this would be kind of a north school. So any of the north neighborhoods, that's their school. And then Remington Jefferson would be the south neighborhood school, same concept. So just before you ask the question, so completing that, at least now in those facilities, that has growth for the existing population and future population in a better facility on both north and south, and then bring the middle school students into Horace Mann Oak. So you've got the Oak Wing, which is primarily an elementary school. Use that as the sixth grade wing. Yeah. And then in the Horace Mann side, develop a seventh grade and eighth grade kind of wing concept. Right? So now you've got one middle school. And oh, by the way, where is it? Right next to the high school.
Right.
Right? So now you can have some of that mentor relationship, coordination of programs from going from middle school to high school.
Yeah.
Right? And you have the two elementaries feeding to the one middle, right? So from a school concept, at one point we had 11 buildings.
Mm.
Now we would have five.
So it lowers the maintenance and all the facilities issues, if you will.
Correct.
Okay.
And not only lowers, but now we're in the better, the newer facilities amongst those that are left.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily change the teachers, because the teacher is going to follow the students. There would still be some, because we're still seeing some decline, there would still be some teacher cuts that are related. If you remember last year, I think there was 20-something teachers were cut.
Yeah.
18 of those were getting cut because of the decline in enrollment.
Okay.
Or 16 or something like that. Some number of those were going anyway because of the decline in enrollment. Schools were doing that on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And partially because they always do that at end of year anyway, but then the teacher population changes, right? Some teachers move out, some teachers retire, and some teachers are just not continued, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're in that first 3 years, they don't really have their full certification, they haven't really fully joined the teacher union,
right?
So they've got some flexibility amongst those three, and because the population was declining, some number of those school teachers were not coming back anyway, so they try to make the best use of what they've got to provide the best for the students that remain.
Okay, I get that.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008. And used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin.